But first, on Open Country, Helen Mark travels to the Hoo Peninsula to find a landscape constantly adapting to our need for development.
Crunch of shells and sand beneath our feet as we walk along the narrow strip between an open expanse of mud flats and behind me the sea defences and the landscape that's known as the Hoo Peninsula. This is on the north shore of Kent, and it's a really fascinating piece of landscape because it carries so many different stories of how it's been used by our society down through centuries. In fact, we have used it, we've exploited it, we've abandoned it, we've moved back in. It's a wondrous yet tiny piece of landscape which kind of reflects our history as a nation. I'm with Rolf Williams, who's you're with the RSPB.
I am, and I'm just watching a marsh harry, actually. It's just dipped over the top of the houses there in the village of Grain. And what you have to imagine is the view that bird has looking down on us on the beach here at Grain, because we're right at the sort of the meeting of the Thames, just to the north of us there, with Southend sweeping across the horizon. And then to our backs is the Medway estuary, and that's flowing down and meeting the Thames right here. And we're looking across to Sheerness on the Isle of Sheppey. And between all of that, because the tides are just right, is this vast expanse of mudflats sweeping out again towards the east. And that bite in the wind that Dickens described so wonderfully in Great Expectations is coming from Eastern Europe, coming from the North Sea. There is nothing to stop the heat being drained from the air. And, of course, that's also bringing with it these important visitors, the birds that are feeding on this mud through the winter.
We look out across the skyline. That's Essex.
That's Essex right there, yes. And so that highway between us and Essex, the river, which not only is a cue that nature uses to move around journeys of thousands of miles, the migratory animals, birds that are here, but of course also the whole human history. The river has been changing its course over millennia. These mudflats are always shifting. And so just as the wildlife has moved and shifted over thousands of years, the way people have used the landscape has also changed. And so the sea defences, these monstrous concrete walls behind us to stop us from the disastrous flooding of, for example, from 1953, but also the defences against invasion. And so we have this First World War, Second World War history, and we've got forts out like the tripods from all of the worlds, sweep marching almost across the horizon in the Thames, that had anti-aircraft gun emplacements in World War II.
So there's a military history, maritime history.
And you see the industry, so the power station to our backs there, which is...
You can see the tower of it from
the tower
here.
There is a container port just round the corner from us, and, you know, 20% of UK gas is arriving right here on the Isle of Grain as well.
And the journey to here, where we are standing at the very tip of the Hoo Peninsula, we came through a most intensely industrial landscape. It was really quite strange, because at one point I was driving through really productive agricultural land. There was fruit and growing and grains, and then suddenly it all changed and it became about industry, and now it's all changed again, and it... Well, it's a funny mix of all those sorts of things.
It is, but by and large it works. I can take you to a nature reserve in the middle, the heart of the Hoo Peninsula, where we can see what this juxtaposition of human needs and the natural world can actually intermesh, and in ways you'd be surprised and couldn't imagine.
Well, for Open Country, I would love to learn more about this Hoo Peninsula. H-O-O, what a strange little word.
I believe it's Saxon, and I think it's to do with the high ground, the spine that runs through the middle of the Hoo Peninsula, which gives us that vantage point to look across into the Thames estuary. But again, that human history going back, the Saxons, the Romans, and even before, it's a fascinating place.
I've come to Lodge Hill. Now, this is another key point on the Hoo Peninsula. And I've organised to meet Owen Sweeney, who's with me now, beside this roundabout, in the centre of which grows a most beautiful willow tree. It's very unusual. And then we've got the road, and then round the edge of the road we have these very high perimeter fences, because behind that lies land that's owned by the Ministry of Defence. And we've come here, first of all, to learn that this did have a very key military history in the past, but that's now no longer in use. But it has a very important part to play in the natural habitat of the Hoo Peninsula, Owen. So, why have you brought me to this roundabout?
I've brought you to this roundabout because this roundabout, which in other ways with your fences that you mentioned in the rest, might not
wire and everything on the
suggest
top.
Much, but these thickets, we would say in a month's time, you will hear one there, and I'll point southeast, and you'll hear a nightingale here, and you'll hear one behind the wire here.
Nightingales,
you will hear
Owen.
Five nightingales singing without moving.
At this roundabout.
Because they're all establishing territories, having come from Africa, and the male birds are singing, and they're trying to outdo each other to gain partners and to establish their territories. So this is one of the best places in England, this very spot, if you wanted to bring relatives or children to hear the first nightingale, this is a place to be.
What's
and that's a green woodpecker.
It's very, very sharp call, isn't it?
It's called a yaffle in the countryside because of that call. But we were mentioning the thickets.
And now we're looking at the ones behind this high perimeter fence here.
Yes, behind the fence. Mm. The actual plants are mainly blackthorn, hawthorn, hazel and the rest. The beauty is that because they are such scrub plants rather than dense, mature woodland, they grow slowly. That's why we've got so many nightingales year after year after year.
The fact that it was a military base, what was happening here, first of all, Owen? And was it this rich natural environment at the same time that they were doing their training or whatever here?
I think it was serendipity for the wildlife in that a lot of this stuff depends on soil. And we've got here clay with holding capacity for water. But the geology also helped the forces in the kind of training that they did.
And what were they doing?
Well, in terms of training, even infantry training within the woods. There was one time I was walking through the woodland with my binoculars and I nearly stepped on a soldier who was in camouflage on the ground. And I got the fright of my life.
I'm sure he was a little surprised as well.
I said, what should I do? Should I walk away quietly? And he said, yeah. And quick.
And are we talking about a big area here, Owen?
We're talking about several hectares. Natural England had to work out how many hectares would be declared a triple SI.
So we're saying the Ministry of Defence owns a site of special scientific interest.
Yes.
A triple SI.
They do, as they do in other parts of Britain.
What are the pressures, though, Owen, on this particular area of land here at Lodge Hill? When you think that we're so close to industry, we've got housing close
yes.
by, and there is a demand for development in both those areas, particularly in housing.
We as residents recognise that. This is a great conurbation of Medway, and therefore there's pressure to increase it. In some ways, though, this is positive. Things of good can come out of this, because if the new flagship policy on planning succeeds in its objectives, there will be development because the balance has gone towards development. But the balancing factor of that is that these protected places that have been designated should have greater protection. And so this could be a test case for the NPPF in its both sides of things, development and protection of jewels. And this is a jewel.
Really, to get a sense of the Hoo Peninsula, you've got to find somewhere that's a little bit of height about it, so that way you can understand the topography of the landscape. But if you really want to understand the history of this landscape, that's a different story. So I'm with Sarah Newsome from Historic England, and this is Northward Hill, and we are looking northward. We're looking down across this open landscape with great pools of water. We're looking to then right across the Thames and all the industry that's on the far side, and then these great liners that are, you know, plying trade back and forth up the Thames. What a great place to come and see what the land looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. What's fantastic about it is you get a real sense of the extent of reclamation on the marshes here. So in the medieval period, all this expanse in front of us was reclaimed from the sea by building walls and digging ditches to drain the land for agriculture, which has created this fantastic landscape we see today. And essentially most of it is still agricultural. But what's interesting is it's also provided a landscape that has drawn industry to the peninsula as well, and innovative technologies as well. We can see in the distance the remains of Cooling Radio Station. It's a unique building in Britain. It was built in 1939 by the post office and was operational by 1942. There's little interruption for the Second World War. It was a radio receiver, and it needed a really long antennae array to work. And this antennae array was 2 miles long and had 60-foot antennae, rhombic antennae, so diamond-shaped antennae, that stretched in a huge line across the marshes. So it was receiving signals from a place called Lawrenceville, and they were coming across the Atlantic. And what this antennae did was it received all these signals and brought them back together.
And really quite a unique process, that.
Absolutely. So it was essentially the ultimate in shortwave receiving stations, and really is unique. I think there was another one in Scandinavia and another one in the States receiving signals that we were sending from Rugby over the Atlantic.
But if you look at this landscape at its most basic level, you think, well, nothing really goes on here. It is a landscape of nothing except for the wildlife we can hear, the sheep that we can see grazing.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, further along the peninsula, for instance, to the west on cliff marshes, we've got the remains of the Edwardian chemical explosives factory there, which is now empty and very much like this, all quiet. There's animals grazing and bird life. But actually, from about 1900 to 1920, there were hundreds of people working on that site, and it was one of the largest factories in the kingdom at that time.
It's interesting that a landscape is used, it has a purpose, and then that stops.
Yeah.
And, well, in a way, it's almost forgotten about. And for Historic England, you did a massive project trying to look at the landscape and understand its history.
We wanted to get an understanding of the Hoo Peninsula, about why it looks like it does and what it is about the history and archaeology of the Hoo Peninsula that makes it interesting, so that when development proposals come along or when people want to change the landscape, that the historic environment can play a role in that change and in those decisions, that it can kind of inform the debates about what happens to the peninsula in the future. What's interesting is that people, outsiders, have always had opinions on who, you know, we can go back to Defoe, writing in the 1600s, being reasonably negative about the Who and kind of talking about it being quite desolate and things. And that comes through writing about the peninsula, you know, right into the 20th century. Once you get onto the peninsula, you find out about all the different stories, about these different things that have shaped the peninsula, the industry, the military activity and the farming. Then you realise it's a kind of complex place. It's got all these wonderful stories, and that gives it a value as you learn about what happened here and why the landscape looks like it does. That's what gives it its interest, really.
I've come to the village of Cooling, and here we can find a very good example of how this landscape is in a constant state of change. Things are very important and in use, and then they become disused, abandoned. And I'm standing in the graveyard that surrounds this tiny little church of St. James's, and I'm with Alison Bucknell, who is the chairlady of the Friends of St. James's. I mean, it looks beautiful from the outside with the lovely white grey stonework and the Gothic arch windows, Alison, but disused?
No, disuse is not quite right. It's not used for regular services anymore, but Churches Conservation Trust have the Friends to look after churches, and we put on events to raise money to look after the church. So it is still part of the community.
But it has a particular relevance still in this landscape.
Yes, definitely. It's connected to Charles Dickens, the writer. He was a great walker, and he frequently walked to churches and villages within reach of Gad's Hill, where he lived. And in Great Expectations, he used the little graves in the churchyard for Pip's brothers and sisters. There's actually 13 little graves, but...
And they're here.
In a row, yes.
Yeah. He described them very well. He called them small lozenge.
That's right, yes,
shaped,
they are. Yes.
Sarcophagus sort of shapes. 1770s, you can make out on some of the headstones.
That's right, you can, yes. And the headstones of the parents are there. It's very sad in a way, because we used to have what they call marsh fever, or the ague, which nowadays is called malaria. And these all died as babies.
But it's so poignant.
It's very sad.
Yeah, looking
yes.
at it, this, in a way, is an attraction to this place.
Definitely, yes.
That's very
yes.
morbid, isn't it? But it is.
No, it is. It brings a lot of people in. In fact, today it has brought a group of school children in to learn about Dickens and Victorian times, which I think is very important, because we are our history.
I've come back out to the eastern end of the peninsula, to Grain, mm-hmm. and I'm about to head out on the Grain Coastal Park, and I'm with Michael Dale. You're a local resident, and you've worked here all your life. Mm. I want to understand more about the people who are here. What's it like living here on this peninsula out into the Thames?
Well, the tendency is to come across that long marsh road, and you come against all this shiny modern engineering structures and a massive great port and all these power stations there. And then they give up at that point and they go back along the road.
Shall we walk out then? There's a footpath yeah. through the trees here, the Grain Coastal Park path.
We're walking through the fort now, and there was a garrison of soldiers here from 1856 right round to 1956. And the whole area, when the army left it, literally got infested completely with bramble. And then we suddenly realised the potential, if we got rid of the bramble and made proper footpaths through, it is quite an incredible place to see.
You've lived here all your life and you worked here.
Not all my life. I was posted here as a policeman. And in fact, I was the acting sergeant for the Hoo Peninsula 26 years.
I'm of a glimpse of the church there off to the west, that would be. And more sightings of the water as we climb up to the top.
That's right.
We shall see a glorious sight of the Thames
any
moment now. And always a reminder of our industry. Look at the tower from the power station behind
That's
us.
Right.
I saw that when I first arrived and
yes.
I was down on the beach.
That's coming down next year.
See,
that
isn't it interesting, Michael? It's always changing this landscape.
That power station has reached the end of its 30-year life.
We would really be where we've climbed to now, on the perimeter of the original fort and military installation.
That's right.
And by Jove, does it give us a view across the Thames. When I arrived, it was all mudflats, but the tide has come in completely, and there's this great sheet of blue edging right up to the greenery and the
That's
perimeter
right.
of this fort.
There's so much to see. You've got over there, you've got Sheerness. Straight ahead, you've got the Whitstable Wind Farm out at sea there.
You can just see the faint white lines on the horizon of the wind farm.
And there's so much to speak about, because in front of that you can see buoys, and underneath that buoy there is a ship loaded with 5,000 tonnes of explosive, which is too dangerous to touch, called the HMS Montgomery. Nobody can come up with a solution what to do with it, so it remains there.
And when you were being the bobby here, what was it like?
Well, you know, when I look at that marsh and it goes on for acres, I don't think there's one ditch that I haven't been fallen in or haven't been thrown in by the poachers.
And an encounter that involves a person that goes back to the days when out in the waters here they anchored the convict ships.
A black skull come up in the mud, just down on the waterfront down there. And when I uncovered it, I took out all the bones that I could find and I assembled them on the beach and found that it was about 3'6". So I spoke to the coroner, because it was obviously black and very, very old, and he suggested that he would get these forensic scientists for the British Museum to come down, which he did. And he came back to me and he said, well, this is approximately 1820 to 1830. It's a female dwarf. He said possibility that she would have been working there, if not even living there, looking after the men. And over there, East Church Harbour, where you see there's a little gap where the bridge is, it would have been on grain that Turner would have sat to actually paint the painting of the Fighting Temeraire. Now, the Fighting Temeraire was the ship that bore its way between HMS Victory, which was fairly well crippled in the Battle of Trafalgar. Nelson had been shot at that stage, and he was about to be boarded when the Fighting Temeraire managed to get between the attacking ship and actually save the day.
Very
was that ship.
Painting, yes. And
it was originally called
from here.
Yeah, but it did become a prison hulk, but he painted masts on it. And his painting features the paddle tug towing the Fighting Temeraire out of East Church Harbour and coming round the Isle of Grain to go down the Thames to Rotherhithe to be broken up. But with a bit of artistic licence, he changed the sunrise into the sunset, because that's where the sun rises, not sets. But artists can do that sort of thing, can't they?
Just before I leave the Hoo Peninsula, I've come back to Northward Hill, because if you just want to take that memory of the landscape away with you, this is the place to come and get that final photograph in your head, as it were. And I'm with Rolf Williams again from the RSPB. So on the horizon, we've got all that industry there, but between us and that, we have a watery landscape full of wildlife, Rolf. Sheep grazing, but birds.
The landscape speaks to us. That's why people come to the Hoo Peninsula. And what does it say? That we have choices, that everything we've seen today has been chosen to look the way it does by people, and some of these choices are becoming increasingly difficult. Where's the right place for development? Where's the right place for nature? And for me, it's very personal, because my father was an engineer. He came here through the Royal Air Force in World War II from Trinidad, and he worked at the Cooling radio station in front of us.
We were hearing about that earlier.
Shortwave radio communications. It was the future. And he wanted me to be an engineer and didn't see any merits in working in nature and conservation. It was something of its time. And now we look across at London Gateway Port there, one of the biggest deep water ports in the country with its huge cranes. And there's two massive, some of the biggest ships in the world there, aircraft flying above us. And there's a real irony, because all of this green space is engineered as well by the RSPB. The water looks natural. These are reservoirs. We're holding on to the water as an important resource here. We flood up the land and all of these little shallows, and there's an avocet feeding down behind the bird hide. I've watched it dipping its head. It's not deep water. It's just the right depth, because we've worked it out using lasers and aircraft, flying over this marsh and seeing where the historic salt marsh used to be from 2,000 years ago. You can actually still see that.
So everything's connected, what we can see now visibly on the surface to what lies below, to the stories of the past and its industries, to now what we can see and what is going to lie ahead for the future. This is a really quite a special little place where that whole timeline of man's hand is, it's here, right in front of us.
Absolutely. And we're still pioneering it and working it out. The flocks of lapwing are here because of the way we've engineered this landscape. The Romney Marsh sheep, that it's taken centuries of farming to know that those particular sheep can live in this particular environment, are grazing this grass to be just right for the birds to nest in it.
But you understand, too, the pressure that's on the land for different uses. And, you know, they've changed so many times. And it's going to happen again in the future.
It's always happening. And what I like is you can see it working. This is sustainable development. Thames Gateway Port there, they moved 250,000 animals off a brownfield site into a new nature reserve next door. And yet it sits alongside one of the most important bird wintering sites in the world. 280,000 birds are coming here. The two are side by side. It's not either or. We have both. So if you need a positive message that we can make the right decisions, we can get the balance right, then you can see it on the Hoo Peninsula. This might have been an airport. The right decisions have been made. It isn't. There will be new housing. It'll be in the right places, just as all of that industry has ended up in the right place, but not at the expense of the nature.
Open Country was presented by Helen Mark and produced by Helen Leonard.